Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
But Adam White is back, ready to go. On a Thursday morning, can't get enough of Thursdays, he reckons, this fella. Morning, Whitey.
Good morning. Big controversy this morning.
What's happened?
Well, once again, Australian soccer has been targeted. It's been unfairly treated. And it's a disgrace. And something needs to be done about it.
Keen to find out more. What's happened?
We're in another group of death.
Well, not just one.
Two.
We're in two groups of death. Do you think it's targeted?
I think it is. Because it's so predictable. It happens every time to us. And once again, an international tournament, whether it's the World Cup, whether it's the Olympics, and Australia finds itself in a group of death. Have we ever not been in a group of death?
I'm not sure we've ever not been in a group of death. Which is disappointing. Because you work so hard. You work so hard to avoid the groups of death. Or to try and find yourself outside of the groups of death. But seemingly, it's a bit more of a challenge.
Well, I think we're being targeted. I just can't see any... Because when the draw came out in the last 24 hours, clearly we were going to be in a group of death. And we were.
Just explain for those playing at home what exactly you are talking about.
Well, the Olympic football tournament had its draw yesterday by FIFA, or done through FIFA. And Australia are going to be in the same group as Spain, Argentina, and an Egyptian side that will have Mo Salah in it. Salah. The really good player. Do you still play for Liverpool?
I don't know if anyone plays for Liverpool.
And then in the women, we got put up with the USA, ranked number one, and Sweden, ranked number five. And also another country, New Zealand. So that's probably harder than the men. But it is amazing. It happens every time. Now, you know what? I have a theory on this.
What is your theory, apart from us being targeted?
Well, we are minnows. So as a result, maybe not so much in the women, but in the men's game, we're minnows. So we are always going to be the worst ranked team in our group. So we're always going to have much better teams in our group.
Yes.
But we're always told that it's a group of death situation. I've been dying to tell you that all since I found out about it yesterday.
It seems that you're upset about this.
No, not really.
Oh, it does. I'm
upset about how we get surprised by it. The soccer fans out there, the sports fans out there get surprised by it because, as I said, we're ranked so lowly, we're obviously going to be put in a draw with teams that are significantly better than us.
Sweden, the USA and New Zealand.
That's
the women's.
Yeah.
That's the women's. That's Group G.
Yeah. So, and we are better. We're a better ranked team with the women than we are with the men, obviously. But
and who are we with the men? Egypt, Spain, and Argentina. Is that us?
That is us. Yep.
So, how do we get through this?
Get better. Fourth ranked team in the group every time?
What you're saying, I think, is that until we become anything more than a minnow, every competition we play in, we will be in
a group of death.
A group of death.
Absolutely.
So are you really in a group of death if you're not very good in the first place?
Well, this is, I think we need to be sort of, this is my point, we need to have a bit better understanding of where we are.
Got to know where you're at, as they
exactly
say in the
right.
classics.
But you do. And I think that's the reality, is that if you're a really good team, you're the first seed in your group of four, so you know you're going to have another team that's going to be pretty good around you, and then you're going to have two teams, one in particular, that you're pretty confident you're going to beat. So if you're Argentina and you're looking up and you're seeing the Socceroos, or the Olleroos, you're going, oh, okay, well, we should get the 3 points there. That's what they would be thinking.
So they've,
they might be a bit dangerous, the Olleroos. You know, they've got some good players and all this sort of stuff, but generally we should beat them. So if you're the fourth ranked team in your group, you'll always think you're in the group of death because you're going to have three teams that are better than you. Anyway, we can move on now.
I think it's dangerous for Argentina to go in with that attitude, with the 3 points in the bag. I just think that's dangerous.
It's an
Olympic tournament.
As I said, my point is, and I'll sort of obviously being a little bit cynical, is that we get surprised, the general sporting public, that we get put in a really tough group. Well, we're going to be, because we're going to have three teams, generally speaking, that are better than us. Two of them, particularly better than us.
I don't think that applies necessarily for the women's.
No, I said that. I'm more talking about the men's. The women have been a solid team for quite a while.
Solid? Mm. Very good.
Well,
been very good. The top five team in the world.
Yeah, that's solid.
That's better than solid. This
anything.
Is the world.
Yeah, but they haven't won anything.
This is the world, mate. We are this little country down the bottom of the planet.
Yeah, but I said solid. I said we're a solid.
No, top five is better than solid.
Solid. Well, we haven't won anything. It we don't get matter. Past quarterfinals.
It doesn't matter. We're better than solid.
We're solid to good.
We're better than solid. No, we're better than solid. Although, having just checked the rankings, setback for us. We're no longer solid. We're outside the top five at the moment. We're ninth.
Yeah, that's solid.
No, well, that's solid.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Top five is better than solid on the globe.
Mm.
Come on, man. Give us some love.
Anyway.
Give us some love. So who have we got? Who have we got in the women's? We've got USA, number one. Sweden, number five. And New Zealand, is that right?
Yep.
We're in New Zealand. They're number 22. So we'll get one. We should get a point in the group stage. We're good enough to defeat Sweden, and we've beaten the US. So... I think the girls are a bit more positive than the boys in that Olympic draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about Patrick Dangerfield?
Which part? The fact that...
The fact that he's out indefinitely.
Yeah, well, indefinitely, just so they don't have a window. They don't have to be accountable to a time frame, I think. So I don't get too bogged down by indefinitely.
It's a big difference indefinitely to definitely playing this week.
No, that's different. But I don't think... I must admit, when he went down the race on Sunday night, I did seem to think that it was a bit more than just a dodgy little ankle sprain. I don't know, just one of those feelings that I had. I don't get too bogged down by it, but it's a blow. It's certainly a blow for the Cats. I mean, they've been waiting all year to get this squad on the field that they want. They want to get Cameron out there. They want to have Dangerfield out there. And they haven't been able to put that all together with the new recruits they put in and see what it looks like. And they won't be able to do that for quite some time again. So it's a bit of a blow for the Cats, but I'm not distressed about it. I'm not too surprised about it, considering how he was looking on Sunday, I must admit.
So I'll ask Boomer this question when he comes in a little bit later on, but I'm just interested in your thoughts initially. Are things starting to conspire against Geelong when you think of... Sean Higgins comes along, picks up a hamstring and a broken thumb or digit...
It's a great word.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a really good word.
Jeremy Cameron hasn't played yet. Patrick Dangerfield had never missed three games in a row across his career, and it happens at the start of the year through a suspension, and now he's out indefinitely with an ankle problem. They're not playing great footy, but they're not playing bad footy. They're sort of just vanilla at the moment. But they're all chips in, and we're five rounds in, and we're not sure about them. And... I think there was, for me, one thing I kind of banked on with the Cats was they would definitely be top four, and with the team that they had, they were the team probably to beat.
Well, I think there's the flip side of that concern, if there is concern, is the upside that is in the offing for Cats fans and for the Cats, that if they've been able to still, what are they, 3-2 at the moment, been able to still be 3-2 and control most games without being overly extravagant or sexy in the modern vernacular, until they get their best team back out there in the park, or close there too, some of the big stars, there's plenty of scope for growth.
Now, there is. I agree with
I
that.
There's opportunity for the Cats.
Absolutely agree with that.
I think it's
that.
Conspiring
but
against
what time, at what time, at what point do the Cats start to think, oh, geez, you know, this is... kind of wouldn't mind a bit of luck here, or wouldn't mind a bit of a go at it. I mean, we are five rounds in, and they've got the Eagles on Saturday, which I still think is the most intriguing game of the weekend.
It's very close.
Melbourne and
Richmond might be the one.
Real setback on that game.
What's happened?
I was sat down by my wife last night.
You seem distressed. Oh, there's an event.
She said, I've got some bad news for you. I'm sensing that you've forgotten.
There's an event on Saturday night, isn't there?
There is.
What is it? Some sort of anniversary situation?
No.
Some sort of child's birthday party?
No, worse.
Family gathering.
Well, no, the family gatherings, that's disrespectful.
What do you mean? Family gathering.
No,
don't say anything. No. You don't have to say anything. I'm going to go a step further and say in-laws family gathering.
That's okay.
That's never okay. It's never okay.
That's fine.
No, it's never okay. You know that. You're being very nice and diplomatic over there because you like people to like think that you're a nice person. But but everyone knows that the in-law family gathering is the one that we never want to go to.
No, that's
just life. No. That's not exclusive to you and your world. That's just life full stop.
No.
The in-law family gathering
is
the
one bigger issue
we would
play.
Prefer to have.
There is a much bigger issue at play. Melbourne and Richmond are playing on Saturday night, the game of the year. And I'm delving once again into the arts.
Oh, no.
Musical theatre. Saturday night.
That is an all-time low.
Great
I'd forgotten
BT.
About it.
Great time.
You know how we have once a year I've got to go to the arts, like a sort of singing and dancing type event to sort of get me culturally sort of exposed.
What's the event? Saturday night.
Anzac Day Eve. Melbourne, Richmond, Carlton, Brisbane in the twilight. Two really important matches. And I'm off to the Regent Theatre to watch chess.
Chess.
Oh, dear.
Now, I'd like to know more about chess. On that bass. And Paulini. Is Rob Mills in that? The great Rob Mills. Roval Primary School's finest. He's there. That's great news. What's happened? What happens here?
Couldn't have been Freo versus, you know, St Kilda or in a standalone type situation. Or in fact, no, Gold Coast versus Port Adelaide at Carrara in a standalone Saturday night game. Why Melbourne Richmond?
Well, I love Nat Bass, so you're in front already. Massive crush on her. Have had since she was the...
Izzy.
No, but long before Izzy. Long before Izzy. That's Mully Grub. The Mully Grub face. Just had the nose and the eyes and the lips and the Mully Grub screen. Back in the old days. Went and saw the Rogue Traders many moons ago. She's cool. Pauline is there. Rob Mills, one of the all-time greats. Great Hawthorn supporter too, Millsy. Loves it.
Yeah, Dustin Martin's at the MCG too.
Yeah, but Millsy's on at the Regent Theatre. Millsy be rocking out. Let me just give you this. Let me set the scene for you. Set during the height of the Cold War, two of the world's greatest chess players, one American, one Russian, find themselves pawns of their own governments, sparring in the turbulent East-West political arena. As the game climaxes and stakes rise, Florence Vassy, a Hungarian-born refugee, finds herself caught in the hurricane between the two grandmasters in a triangle of both love and power. That's what you're in for. That's exciting. How good's that going to be? Well,
if it was a Tuesday night, nothing else on, you know, yep, okay, no dramas. Saturday night, Anzac Day Eve. Oh, I'd call that a fixed clash.
Well, I must admit, I was expecting a bit more just family sort of gathering, like someone's 37th birthday. Or
well, that's all right, you can watch the TV.
Which would be annoying if that was going to take away from your Saturday night. But Chess the Musical, I want to hear what it's like. I might go. Not Saturday night, of course, because Melbourne Richmond, I don't know I'm going to be there. but I might go and have a look at that. Give me an update on what that looks like, please. You've got IQ.
Yeah, but I know all that. But you somehow it tells you, you know, you have your, what's that thing you have at halftime in the musical? Intermission?
Intermission.
And you go and get your chalk top. And they say, oh, geez, look, Melbourne are going well. You go, oh. You know, like, geez, Dusty's kicked five in the first half. She must be playing forward, and they're having a conversation as they're milling around the sort of, you know, the seats. Ah, it's just no good.
Could be worse. Well, probably not. Probably not. But what about if you did this? What about if you stole a costume from the Sesame Street Circus in Adelaide?
Yeah, Big Bird.
The Big Bird story. They've returned at the thieves, hiding an apology note in its beak. This is great. $160,000 costume. Wow.
That's very expensive.
That's very expensive for a Big Bird costume. $160,000. was stolen from the circus in Boynton Park at Theberton. Thebarton. Is it Thebarton or Theberton? Thebarton. Whatever it is. Anyway, someplace in Adelaide. Between Sunday night and Monday morning, and then dumped back near the circus tent yesterday morning. The suspects, who dubbed themselves...
Hang on a second.
Who dubbed themselves the Big Bird Bandits. I didn't read that bit. They gave themselves their own nickname. That's awesome. Said no harm came to the bird, and he was a great guy. We are so sorry. We had no idea what we were doing. Or what our actions would cause, they wrote. We were just having a rough time. We're trying to cheer ourselves up. We had a great time with Mr. Bird. He's a great guy, and no harm came to our friend.
So they weren't busted because they were walking. Remember in the Muppet movie where the Big Bird's just walking down the road with his suitcase wanting a lift? He wasn't sort of pulled over by the police?
I don't remember that. I don't think I've seen the Muppet movie.
Oh, you got to have seen the Muppet movie. Some of the all-time greats.
Some SMS traffic coming through regards to your Saturday night dilemma. Can you use an earphone, Maxwell Smart style? Have you got a little? Can you put the phone on with the game and the earpiece and watch the game?
I'll be watched like a hawk. This has been tried before.
Geez, Whitey, that sounds awesome. I'm going to Lions and Blues, and we'll take a moment to think of you. Says Sam off the SMS as well. Not a lot of positive feedback coming your way, or a lot of support or empathy coming your way from our listeners. Funny stuff. Just make sure you wake up just before intermission. That's the real advice for the day, so you can go and get the chop top. If you sleep through intermission, your moment's gone.
You can't sleep through intermission. That's when the lights come on, and because there's never a lot of leg room in these old theatres. People clambering over the top of each other to go to the toilet and stuff like that. It really, you know, the thing about intermission, there should never be an intermission.
Why is that?
Well, it just breaks the momentum. Plus, you've got to be there an extra 20 minutes. But you don't want intermission.
I think that best.
It's like a rotation policy in the football. They've got to go for a break. Just keep going.
You know what's going to happen? You're going to come back here Monday morning, and you're going to be so excited by what you saw with this love triangle. And from our Hungarian-born refugee, who finds herself in the middle of the hurricane, the political storm, powers of the West. It's going to be a fascinating story. Can't wait. Can't wait to hear more about it on Monday morning.
You tell me about the football and I'll tell you about chess.
Hey, Rob Harris has been very good to us through the journey when the big news comes in the world of sport from a European perspective, and there's nothing bigger than this European Super League disaster, really, that we've learned about in the last 48 hours. So much has changed. We thought we'd get him on to give us the latest. Rob, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Great to have you with us. Now, we spoke to you a couple of days ago when this was all breaking, this news about this European Super League and what it might mean and who is going to be involved. 48 hours later, Rob, effectively, it's disappeared. What's happened?
The shortest lived competition in sports history, perhaps, before it was even kicked, before the whole thing imploded. And what a mess. What a chastening experience, particularly for the English clubs who had to go into complete climb-down mode with apologies, even from Joel Glazer, the co-owner of Manchester United, who rarely says anything at all in any form, even written statements. And, you know, he's accepted that they misjudged the mood of the fans, showed a lack of respect for the traditions of football and the pyramid system with promotion and relegation, because what this Super League would have done is created a largely closed European competition, replacing the open Champions League format for these teams with qualification secured through domestic finishes. Instead, the dozen and three more that they hope to add would be guaranteed a place year after year for more than two decades at least in this new Super League. And this went absolutely against the desires of their fans and particularly the British government and even the players, with the Liverpool players in particular going into open revolt on Tuesday night, with a series of posts opposing it and backing the Champions League system that currently exists. And then, before not, the capitulation, the U-turn, and the announcement by the end of Tuesday that all six English clubs had quit the Super League. And then, by the morning, an acceptance from the Spanish and Italian clubs that it was over. But only over for now. The likes of Juventus in their statement dangling out hope that it could be revisited, saying they still believed in the objectives they were seeking and they would look at it again, perhaps at some point. So no sense they are giving up, but it is doomed. It's over. And 48 hours, that shook football. They've brought it back down to earth, and it seems like normality of sorts is back for now.
Rob, the biggest question in all of this, I think, watching it all unfold and being just staggered at the immediate response of the fans and the industry and the global football world, really, and then the retraction and the disappointment and the dissolving of the whole concept, is how did such intelligent people get this so very, very wrong?
They completely disregarded the potential backlash. There's been so long isolating themselves from fans and not engaging, particularly at Manchester United, for instance. And you've got the egos at places like Real Madrid, where they believe they are such huge beasts, like the president, Florentino Perez, that they were blinded by their own greed, it seemed to be, and lacking the sort of sense that they'd have to actually sell this vision to fans and to regular people and to mount the positive case. The fact is, plans emerged on Sunday and eventually were confirmed late in the evening European time. They put out a statement that was lacking considerable detail, a website that was lacking in depth, and a logo that was being mocked over its design, given the wealth behind it. And they didn't mount not only a PR offensive, but an offensive to win over fans. And that's something that they didn't do in terms of blitzing the airwaves to try to sell the positive vision. Instead, the critics took hold, particularly in the British sense, and the government as well. They didn't even have German or French clubs on board. Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich opted out. And sooner or later, it started to implode. They were threatened with expulsion from existing competitions. Players were threatened potentially with not being able to play for their countries, particularly at World Cup. And they didn't, they witnessed the impending backlash, the steady sense that it all started to fall apart. And the fact is, they haven't had the saints to blame for their strategic blunders.
Let's get to it. The Whitey, world famous 5-question Vlado Steakhouse quiz. Your voucher is just 5 questions away to the magnificent Vlado Steakhouse, and all you've got to do is take him on and answer the final question. But I want you to run the board. I want more than that today. I want a board-running expedition from one of our great contestants out there in RSM Land, 1-300-652-927.
Last question is quite controversial, but apart from that, it's quite an easy quiz this morning, so hopefully one of our members of the Breakfast Club can get it correct.
Controversial. Why have you gone controversial?
Explain more later. 1-300-652-927. Paul from Dandenong is first up this morning. Paul, good morning.
Morning, gentlemen.
Okay, question number one
Hang
for
on.
You.
Paul, are you feeling confident about running the board?
No.
Paul, it's not what we're after.
All right, Paul. The new president of Collingwood shares the same surname as a former winner of the Australian Open tennis. Who is that new president?
Give us a hint, gentlemen.
I just did. Shares a name with a former Australian Open tennis winner.
Newcomb.
Bad luck, Paul. Craig from Camberwell. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, boys.
The new president of Collingwood shares the same name as a former winner of the Australian Open. Who is that new president that was named last night?
Can't say I follow Collingwood, so I've got no interest. But I'll say Cash. Ben.
Not Cash.
This is, unless you know, this is going to be difficult. Because there's been a lot of Australian Open winners, as you well know. In the men's or the women's brigade?
Men's.
Okay, just checking.
Men's. He's been on Collingwood's board for about 15 years.
But no one cares who's on footy club boards, mate.
I agree with you on that.
No one gives a fat rat's clacker. If it's not your footy club board, no one cares.
Yeah, but he's the president taking over from Eddie Maguire.
We understand that, and he's been in the news the last 12 hours. Yeah. And that's okay. But
all right, Paul,
outside of that, no one cares.
Paul from Frankston, good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Whitey and Half, how are you?
Going well, Paul. You still a chance to run the board here.
That's correct. Who is the president of Collingwood?
Corder. Mark Corder.
Very good, very good. Love Christian names, so that's good.
Who was the Australian Open winner?
Peter Corder.
Of course.
And without the second E.
Correct. And his daughter, of course, is?
She's got... He's got two
daughters. Two, who's the best one?
I should know that.
You should. I'm surprised you don't. Anyway, question for another day. Mark, okay. Paul's about to run the board.
Sorry, Paul. Question number two. This man has just won a contract extension for a further 12 months to keep coaching the Brisbane Heat. Who is that?
Darren Lehman.
Very good. They had a review, the Brisbane Heat.
I thought he was gone from that.
No, he was in real danger, and he's been given a contract extension. I think wouldn't be surprised if maybe the Melbourne Renegades were sniffing around there.
I'd be disappointed if they weren't.
If it wasn't going to happen for him at the Heat, so he stays on. Paul, question number three, and we're up to the absolutely up to the famous voice. Here we go.
Probably a fresh rivalry in the competition that I think everyone embraces.
Who is that, Paul?
Can you play it again?
Sometimes? Yeah, I can, absolutely.
Probably a fresh rivalry in the competition that I think everyone embraces.
Who is that, Paul?
Is it coach of something?
Yes, correct. That's correct.
Chris Fagan. No.
Paul! Oh, jeez, Paul.
You nurture these people, you nurture them, you guide them through, and they go and do that to you.
It's Dean from Shepparton. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning. Is it Luke Beveridge?
Yes.
Very good, Dean.
No one can run the board
today. Himself. All right. Two questions to go, Dean. Paul Gallen last night won his heavyweight duel over Lucas Big Daddy Brown in the first round. Which NRL club was he a premiership captain of?
Oh. Cronulla?
Very good, Dean.
Well, I thought we had some telecommunication issues there. It was going to be a setback.
No doubt, Dean. Okay, question number five, a little bit controversial.
Now, this is for the Vlado Steakhouse $210 voucher.
This is.
Melbourne's own world-renowned steakhouse, if you don't mind.
This is. You ready, Dean?
Ready.
Hope his telecommunications.
Who am I? I am the first Australian to win the World Series of Poker back in 2005 when I won $7.5 million. Who am I?
Yes, I know this.
Joe Hashem.
Bingo. Well done, Dean. Good job.
Massive crowd at the MCG expected. We might not get the full 100,000 because we're not allowed just at the moment, but it's going to be a huge day. It always is a big day, not only for football, but for Australia. And I'm sure there's a special significance for those that are out there donning the stripes or the sash in the game. And Callum Brown will be donning the stripes and the Magpies in the big one. He joins us on the line. Good morning, Callum.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We are well, mate. Thank you for your time this morning. It is a big week, not only for footy, but for Australia, as I mentioned. And there are special tributes paid all through the week. And we get a lot of stories and people come to talk to players about what this weekend means for the nation, not just the footy clubs. How have you found being involved in Anzac Day games in the last couple of years?
I mean, it is a massive day. And I guess football is just a small part of the day. But it is really important as well. And I've played in two, I think, now, and they're probably, besides if I was lucky enough to play in finals, they're my favourite day to play in. It's an amazing moment, the minute silence before we play, and you can really reflect on a few things and then go out and hopefully try and win. But it really is an amazing day. The atmosphere is like nothing I've ever experienced in the game.
So how do you cope with that? I'm interested to get your take on that. I mean, a packed MCG must be a very, very special place for a footballer. I've never experienced it to that level, but I imagine it's pretty cool, a packed MCG, but I imagine it brings a lot of pressure as well. Do you feel that when you're out there?
It's almost more excitement. Like, see, I think, like, the last time I played, there was about 93,000, and just to look around and see that many people and that roar after the minute silence, it is a little bit... you feel a lot of emotions, I guess, like a little bit of pressure, a little bit of excitement, but it brings a lot of energy as well. It's really exciting.
And Callum, the fact that the team isn't travelling overly well at the moment, has there still been a focus on what Anzac Day means? I mean, for a number of years now, both clubs do a fair bit of almost education in that space in the build-up to the game, or has this year been a little bit more focus on trying to sort of right the ship a bit?
No, yeah, we do a bit of education every year, and we actually have a guest speaker every year come and speak to us, usually someone that's been involved in the Defence Force or past wars, And it's really interesting. It sort of gives you a lot of perspective that, you know, we are essentially playing a game at the end of the day. Like, it obviously is really important, but there's a lot of people out there doing, I guess, some a bit more important stuff than us, and protecting people's lives and giving us the freedom to, I guess, play this game that we do.
Yeah, absolutely. So how do you assess how the team's going at the moment? Taylor Adams comes in here every second week and we get a really good insight into perhaps keeping things in perspective. But based on where we're at the moment, things are starting to get a bit serious for the Magpies.
Yeah, I mean, we obviously haven't started the way we wanted to. 1-4 is never good, no matter what way you look at it. I think it doesn't feel like we're far off, even if that might sound a bit silly. Like, we're playing some really good patches, not consistently, but, our game looks really good in patches, and then it sort of feels like we go away from it a bit. And if we can put that all together, I think we can still be a really dangerous team this year. So, yeah, not an ideal start, but there's a lot of season left, and hopefully we can turn it around.
And is that the messaging from Bucks and the coaching staff? I mean, you would know, being Collingwood all your life, when your old man was playing, that there's heaps of coverage on your footy club, and it doesn't matter what happens. Every week there's a story that comes out of Collingwood. But there is some heat on now because you are 1-4. But is the message about that there's 17 rounds to go and you've got heaps of time to sort yourselves out if you can do it, and this is the start of that this week?
Yeah, that definitely is the message. I mean, we can't change what's happened in the first 5 rounds. And we've obviously got a few injuries as well, but that's never stopped us from winning games before, and we're really confident we can win a lot of games still. And we've still got really high ambitions for this year. Like you said, I've been sort of involved with Collingwood for a while, and there's media non-stop, so good and bad. But at the moment, it's sort of bad and maybe fair enough, but we're pretty confident we can turn it around.
What about this game on the weekend for the mighty Melbourne Victory? Of course, after the sacking of Grant Brebner, someone had to step into the job to take the Melbourne Victory forward. That man is Steve Keane, who joins us on The Breakfast Club. Steve, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are we doing?
We are going very well, mate. How are you doing? Because your world has changed dramatically in the last couple of days.
Yeah, it has. We've got a big job in our hands, and, you know, it's one that, you know, we relish to try and turn the fortunes of the club. We're feeling for the fans and the members, but we're determined. You know, we spoke with the players yesterday and really, you know, told them exactly where we are and what we have to do, and that they're playing for their futures at the club.
It's been there's no sugarcoating, it's been a horrible season for the Victories. Bottom of the ladder, everyone's playing for their careers, as you rightly say now. Grant's lost his job and you've been given the opportunity. Was it when you were addressed by the chairman or whoever it was that offered you the position, was there any hesitation considering what the year's been like and the opportunity that might present? Or did you think, no, this is my role, I need to step up and help the club go forward?
Exactly that. It's about helping the club, you know, and if I can help, you know, with the experience I've had over the years, my coaching experience and where I've coached, I think we can squeeze more out of the playing group, because we've got some players coming back this week. We've had a horrific, run of injuries, but some of them are coming back now, and we really just want to get as many points as we can in these 10 games, and, you know, we really feel for the fans. Because, you know, we can feel the hurt that's coming across from the grandstand out onto the pitch, and I can honestly say that the players are hurting as well. I think that's been put at their door, that maybe they don't care, they're not hurting. I know dressing rooms, I know players, and they're hurting. And the only way to put it right is by rolling my sleeves up, playing for the club, playing for the badge, and making sure we have a respectable amount of points. What that point tally will be remains to be seen, but we want to catch the team above us and go from there.
Steve, it's obviously a really difficult and awkward situation where you take over, where you've been assistant coach, you've worked closely with Grant, and,
yeah,
you know, I can't imagine what that would be like. So take us into that. What is it like?
Never nice, because, you know, as somebody, you know, Brebs is 100% a Victory man. You know, he's been here a long time. He's fabric of the club, and I can tell you, it was really, really hurting. You know, every time we didn't get a result, and then obviously he's left the club, which was, you know, really emotional for him, emotional for everybody. You know, But now, you know, I've seen it before. It's happened to me before. When you leave clubs, it's terrible. But when you're employed by the club and you're employed because of, you know, what you've done in the past, you need to bring all those experiences to the front and put it out onto the park and make sure that we can get results. That's all it's about, getting results and making sure that we're really respectful for the history of the club.
So most of our listeners would know of Blackburn Rovers, and you were the manager of Blackburn, and that's sort of the headline act from your perspective. Now coming into the Victory as the caretaker coach, what are you going to do? Are you going to play differently, dramatically differently? Are you just going to try and bring some confidence and fun back into the group? What are some of the key fundamentals you're going to try and get out of this group before the end of the season?
Well, the fundamental thing, guys, to be totally honest with you, is that, you know, I'm not going to be here at the end of the season. You know, there's going to be a new coach that's announced probably within the next 2 weeks. So, you know, whoever's coming in will be looking at the playing group and deciding who's going to stay. So I was very honest with the players and said, listen, you're playing for your future, not only here. If you don't perform, you certainly won't be here. But where will you be? You know, they have to perform and they have to take that responsibility and meet it head on and represent themselves and, more importantly, represent the club. So there's no grey areas with the players. That, you know, there's no, I wonder what's going to be happening. They've got to, you know, really make sure that they perform for themselves and actually look at the table. I think sometimes we don't look at the table, you know, when we don't want to look at it, because you look at it when you're at the top. But if you're not at the top, you don't look at it. I think we all have to look at it and look at it hard and say, do we want to be in that position? And, you know, we can't really shy away from the responsibilities that we have.
The Carlton Football Club inside the Blues with the co-captain Sam Doherty, who joins us on a Thursday morning. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning. Thanks for having me in again.
Nice to have you with us. Bit to talk about with your football club. So what we thought we'd do is we thought we'd really lawyer up, so to speak, get another one in to help us through. And not just anyone. The AFL Games record holder, Brent Harvey, has joined us to go through the rest of the morning with us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Boomer.
Good morning, boys. Feels a little bit different here on a Thursday other than the Friday. Brad Johnson, the good man, he's filling in for me tomorrow.
He is.
Of course, the Kangas play in Perth, and I've got to head over there.
I want to know why you're flying so early tomorrow. Well, what's going on?
I don't know.
There?
It's an 8:15 flight.
You're playing 8:10 Saturday night.
Mate, I'm not. Who do we fly with? Virgin. I'm not Virgin. Qantas? Virgin?
Virgin?
No, I'm not Virgin.
It's a very unusual time.
I've got no idea. Yeah, I do like sitting over here, though, Whitey. Yeah, I feel like. So, you know, in football, when it works, you start in the guts. The next year, you're at the halfback flank. Then you're in the back pocket. Then you're on the bench, and you're sort of thinking, I'm getting the gist here. It's working opposite here for me, Sam. I was where you're sitting. I moved one to me right. There's only one more spot for me half.
You want my chair?
You know where it is, don't you? No, I'm not sure I can get up this early every single morning.
There's a reason.
I'm not sure whether Daniel and I can either.
We're getting through. Just like the Blues are at the moment, because it's all you can do. One foot in front of the other, Doc. How's your week been?
Yeah, It's been interesting. I think there's been, as probably everyone's aware, there's a fair bit of external noise or pressure or whatever you want to call it outside the club. But I was just saying before, the internal of the club, we're really focused on this week's game and getting better as a footy club. And I think the weekend's game showed us that we've got to put in a lot more hard work to be able to compete well with the top teams of the comp. And we're under no illusions that we need to do that, and that's what this week's been about, which hasn't been that different to most other weeks. But it's been a big focus on making sure that our skill level's better than it was on the weekend.
Yeah, that was a lacklustre skill performance on Saturday night, no doubt. So there's a couple of things in that, just in that answer. It's been a busy week. A lot of people talking about your footy club. Port Adelaide are a serious football team. I tipped them to win the premiership. Not sure if anyone else in the room did.
I did.
You did too. Boomer did too. So the three of us have tipped Port Adelaide to be premiers. You played them on the week and you lose by, it was 20-odd points in the end.
28.
28, was it, Boomer?
Yep.
Which is probably a little bit flattering in the game, I must admit, being there live. But they're a serious contender. Do you think the reaction to the performance has been over the top, or is it justified purely from your view?
Oh, I think as much as everyone tips Port to be up there, I think a lot of people expected us to be contending up towards the eight as well. So
yep,
you'd
that.
Expect a better performance than you did in the weekend. So I understand the commentary around it all. Whether it's completely justified is it doesn't really matter, to be honest. It's people get paid in the media to have their opinions on things, and our game on the weekend was probably one of the bigger games on the weekend in terms of the whole league and the narrative of the league. So we didn't perform the way we wanted to particularly, and then Port played pretty well, and Port are a very good side. So if anything, it shows us that the benchmark that we need to get to be able to play in those games at the end of the year. And in the end, whether I think it's right or wrong or other people's opinions is really irrelevant from my perspective. And Boomer would know, when you're in a footy club, you really have to focus on what's inside the club and what we're trying to chase and the standards that we're trying to produce on game day. And obviously on the weekend, that wasn't our best version of ourselves, and we're trying to focus on bringing our best each week as consistently as we can. So that's been our focus through this week.
A little bit of hysteria for me, because if we go through the tips and every single one of us picked Port Adelaide to win, and
actually,
everybody else in the media...
For me, except
for... Oh, yeah, of course.
I thought they could win.
Half spice, because he just picks Carlton.
Yeah, that's correct.
True.
I understand that.
Not true. I just thought they could win.
But everybody in the media picked Port Adelaide to win. They win, as expected, and everyone jumps on. And I don't know, there's certain parts of the game that didn't look fantastic for you guys, but you got to remember, Port Adelaide are a serious team. They're going to win the flag, or potentially win the flag. They're going to finish in the top four. They're going to finish in the top four regardless. So I think we've got to wait. Who do you got this week?
Brisbane. Another good test for us, which is awesome. It's nothing more that you want when you have a poor week in terms of the way you're playing, that you want to play the best sides.
Yep.
And we get another prelim finalist from last year this week, which is awesome for us.
You beat the teams that you're probably meant to beat this year, Gold Coast, yep. Fremantle. You've won both of them. Richmond. Oh, I'm tipping everybody pick Richmond as well. The Collingwood game, now where Collingwood are sitting, you'd probably throw a blanket over it and say, well, touch and go. But you've won the games you're meant to win. I just think it's a big reaction on the back of one loss against a very, very, very good opposition.
See, Boomer, Half and I have been, and Rammer have been arguing about Carlton for weeks. Yeah, not just in the studio, but over breakfast.
It carries over. It spills over.
And I think, Sam, you're coming in at the perfect time, because a little bit like Boomer was saying, your three losses have been against teams that finished in the top six last year, and Brisbane's another one this week. You've beaten Gold Coast at Gold Coast, and you beat Freo. So for me, you're where I think you probably not should be, but
yeah,
where
I'm with you,
you kind of are. Based on last year. So the question I've got for you is, internally, how far off, take the ladder out of it, how far off your best are you? And are you disappointed, or are you just, well, you are where you are and you've got to get a scalp to get the confidence to go to the next level?
I'll try and deep pack it all. I don't think we've played at our best this year so far, and I think that shows a group that is developing and trying to learn exactly who we are as a group. And you look at Richmond been playing the same way for almost 5-6 years, and they're so well drilled, and I think we're on the path to that. And if you asked me this question at the start of the year about where we finish, what's the pass mark, I've always said it's about improving every week, and if we keep improving every week, results take care of themselves. I think that throughout this year our game has evolved already. I think early on, we went very, very quick and we weren't able to defend the ground. And we went a couple of weeks where we probably went ultra defensive and we went very slow. So we're trying to sort of mend our game into exactly what we're going to look like as a footy club and what we think stands up at the time that we need it to stand up. And for me individually and for the team, I don't think we've got to what our best footy is right at the moment. And I think that that's part of our growth as a group and having a pretty unstable group over the last 2 years, which we're still trying to build the right mix that is going forward for us. I think we've had elements of our game that's been quite good, and we've had quarters and halves that have been really good. But in the long term, I think we're still building to what we're going to be. I think we'll be a far better side in the back half of the year because we'll understand exactly who we are as a group. And this is what happens in developing groups. The guys at the top don't just pop out and they know their game plan and they just play it from day dot. There's an evolution of how they get to where they are, and then when they know that competes at the top level and they play that consistently, and you look at the teams like Port, like their identity, they just do the same thing every week, and that's just, and they win games of footy, and that builds belief. Richmond are the same; they just build belief off the back of what they do. And I watched the Making Your Mark documentary last year, and the belief and the the drive that that Richmond group have, based off just the known of what they're going to bring each week and what they're playing, and everyone knows everyone's on the same page. We're still building that, and that's, I think that's okay. And as a group, I've got a lot of confidence in what we've got at the club in terms of coaching and players, and I think that our group is ready to be able to compete at a high level against the best sides. It's about consistently building on what we have and being able to do that more over a game and then more over a month. And you're right, we've played some good sides this year, and we've expected to be better than what we were, and that's, we're not hiding away from that, but it's just, it does show that we've got a lot of hard work to do internally in terms of our game plan and individual work, individual skill, craft to get us to where we want to go, and we're up for that challenge, and that's what we want to do.
So what's lacking? Is it just consistency, doing it for longer, so it's a concentration thing, or are there things lacking that you as a captain are really hard on the players at the moment, saying, hey, if we're going to get to that next level, these are the things that we need to start doing and doing pretty quickly and better?
Yeah, well, there's obviously the consistency of doing what we want through games, which is an obvious one. And then I think it showed in the weekend, our skill level just has to get better. And that comes from a lot of hard work. There's a lot of breakdowns in our game where we've actually got things where we want, but then we just miss a skill that good teams don't. And that's me included. I dropped 2 marks on the weekend that cost us 2 goals that you can't do anything about other than just work harder, really. That's the reality of it. You've got to work unbelievably hard on your touch, your craft, your kicking, your marking, your ability to be able to defend, and all that. If everyone's on the same page and everyone's working just as hard as each other, which I believe we are, it will turn. And that's what we've got to believe in, and that's what we're doing, and that's what we've committed to as a club.
I think we'll know a little bit more about Carlton in a couple of weeks. They've got Brisbane at Marvel, and then they've got Essendon at the MCG. We know what Brisbane can bring.
Yep.
And Essendon is that team that is a little bit inconsistent as well. Their good is decent, isn't it? And their poor is pretty low. So I think we'll know a little bit more about Carlton and where they sit in the group.
If you're a supporter of Carlton or you're a supporter of Essendon, because there has been so little success in the last 20 years, there is impatience.
Absolutely.
And it's like the wick. It seems to burn a bit quicker on Carlton and Essendon because of the impatience over the last 20 years. And that's unfortunately the reality of the situation. So I don't know whether, say, a Ben Rutten or a David Teague will have the same sort of time as other clubs, because there have been some unsuccessful rebuilds along the way, and that's a reality. But Carlton is close. So, Sam, you're getting judged on the fact that you're that emerging team that is wanting to jump into the eight. You want that internally. The fans want that externally. So you're going to be judged now higher than what you'd perhaps been judged when you went through some pretty dark times at the club, where there wasn't an expectation you were going to win.
Yeah, and that's an expectation that we're happy to have. And this is what I think that our group is ready for that expectation, and we're fully aware that it's where it is, and we're fully aware of what we need to do to be a better side. And we've said this the whole year, that we're under no illusions that we need to work harder. You don't just jump from, I don't even know, we were 13th or 14th last year to top four. That just doesn't happen without a lot of hard work. And we know that. And that's the thing that I can stress here, is we're working bloody hard as a footy club. Every team is, but I think that we're working extremely hard to be a top footy side in the future. And that's what you need to do. And on your point to the fans and the frustration, that's what makes Carlton footy fans so good. Like, they're so passionate, they're so driven for us to be successful, and that's what makes our club's fans who they are, and that's okay. It's like, as much as sometimes you wish that they sometimes give you a break, but that relentless pursuit of success and the passion that they bring to games and to our club is what we love about them. So I'm not saying lose any of that, and it's just, I think we just need to just take a back seat and just relax for a bit and enjoy the ride of what it is. And that's a footy club that's, we're on the up, we're working bloody hard, and we believe in what we're doing. And as long as everyone believes that, then the results will continue to take care of themselves.
And you know that better than most, because you were a Carlton fan growing up, so you were one of those.
Yeah, I was one of those.
Hey, just on your co-captain, Paddy Cripps, and the amount of scrutiny, I guess, pressure, focus, spotlight on him. You know, it was only after about round two that the game had gone past Patrick. Is he going to re-sign at the footy club? He's trying to do too much. He's trying too hard. How is he going personally, and how are you assessing him as a footballer and a leader at the moment?
Yeah, he's going fine. I think it's part of the game. When you come out of contract, there's just the spotlight comes on you, and that's just the reality of, you know, I think it happens across the league every year. And he's working extremely hard as a leader. He's so invested in this group and so invested in getting us to where we want to go that, like, it's hard work for to be a leader of any footy club. But it's also the challenge of why you love doing it. And he's as invested as you possibly can be in dragging this group to where we all want to go. And I think it's another one of those ones that when you're a great player, there's great expectations. It's like a footy club. It's just on an internal point of there's just one person that the spotlight goes on. And when you've produced the way that he's produced over his career, if there's a 5% drop in performance, people love to point that out, especially when things aren't going the best at the club. There's always pinpoints that you can just start going at different players. And at the moment, he's probably the forefront of where everyone's sort of pointing. But he's a bloody hard worker. I don't know if any of you guys have met him too much. Half obviously has, but he will work incredibly hard to get himself to where he wants to be and the player he wants to be. And I've got no doubt that whatever form slump that everyone thinks he's in, he'll get out of it quite comfortably.
And how are you going?
Me?
Yeah, because you've had a few moments in the last few weeks, and you know, we watch Sam a lot closer because we get to spend some time with you, and there's been a few moments deep in defence. How are you coping with it all?
Oh, it's a tough one. It's my game is probably a reflection of our team a little bit at the moment. I'm doing 90% of my game, probably the best I've ever done it over my career. And there's that little 10% that you're trying to just reduce in terms of, you know, I seem to kick a ball out in the full every week and I've dropped a couple of marks. But that's footy. Everyone, I think in life, you got to understand that everyone's going to make mistakes. It's about reducing the impact of your mistakes, firstly, which on the weekend I had a couple of costly ones, which, as I said before, I just got to work bloody hard to reduce that gap. And but in terms of my overall footy, I'm probably doing the best I have for a very long time, and that's going back to what's perceived as my best years of my career. I feel like I'm a better player than I was then in terms of my ability to defend. Firstly, first off, in terms of individually team defense, but at the moment there's just some glaring obvious mistakes that I'm making, which is exactly what the group is doing. So it's the one great thing about footy is you play a week, you get to work extremely hard the next week to be able to come out and play better the week after. And that's my quest, to be the best player I can be. And there's some areas that I've grown really well in, and some stuff that I just got to tidy up, and that's the enjoyment of footy.
Sam, tell us about Sam Walsh. Now, you get spoken about a fair bit, and I love when they read. I was lucky enough to work with Sam in the Australian. What do you call it?
I don't know what I call
it. You call it some juggernaut, I think it was when it used to go.
Oh, no, junket.
That's right. Was lucky enough to work with Sam, and people were saying trade number one. I knew it was going to be Sam Walsh, and I urged Carlton just to say, do not trade number one. This kid is special. I could see his work rate from a mile away, and I was just speaking to you off air before. Tell us about his work ethic. And I mean, he's racking up the numbers, and for me, it's through one thing. It's through work rate. Is he the same at training?
Yeah, and I said off air that when a genuine superstar walks in your door, from almost day one, you can tell that they're going to be something special. And we spoke about it when he first came in. Just the thing that stood out to us was his training habits and his intent at training and his intensity at training. And that's just followed through his game. He's getting better and better each week. In terms of his work ethic, it's his drive to be the best that is going to get him to the level that he wants to go to. And that's little things for me. Like, he plans his week to a T in terms of what he wants to get done, in terms of his skill, his recovery. Like, everything is so meticulous in the way he goes about it during the week. And then he comes out and performs on game day. The bit that he's got that a lot of players don't is he's tough. but he can run.
Yep.
Like that blend.
It's a good mixture, isn't it?
That's the hardest blend to have in footy. Like, there's a lot of guys that are extremely tough inside, good players with their hands, but then they struggle on transition. And then you've got a lot of guys that can run that can't win the ball on the inside. And to be able to have both that's the sweet spot of footy. And I'm excited to see what he's going to produce over the next.
He's a competitor. That's what he is.
And that's one of the great things. But you have one of them in your team. You can build around a lot of that.
He's been central to the to some of the friction historically. And I think that was one of the critical things from our group last year, is, you know, they embraced that a little bit more than maybe the fact that they weren't as aware of it as they should have been in the final the previous year. I think with the depth of our group and what they've been doing, I'm sure that GWS will spread the physical love further than Marcus.
Spread the physical love. I like that phrase from Luke Beveridge, coach of the Bulldogs, getting ready for tomorrow night's clash against the Giants, expecting some heat, Boomer, and this new football rivalry that's emerged in the last 5 years or so.
And it's good, isn't it? Because you actually look forward to that game. Normally you think Marnik Roval on a, when is it, Saturday? Is it Saturday?
Friday night.
You think, oh, it's Marnik Roval, it's going to be cold, it's going to be wet, it's going to be dewy. Gold Coast, who is it? GWS versus, three times, GWS versus the Bulldogs. But now with that rivalry, and do they go after Marcus Bontempelli? Do they go after, McRae out in the wing? What are they going to do? I love seeing the little battles within the battles. And I still cannot get my head around why we don't tag their best player.
Well, who would you tag?
You go after Bontempelli.
Take the Bont out.
Yeah.
Can you tag? Is he taggable?
He's a little bit like Dusty now. So he's a midfielder that when he goes forward, you just have a different plan for him. And yes, you do. Yeah, you do. For me, you have to. And he is taggable. I think everybody's taggable.
No, I understand that. But when you're doing the planning, this is for you as well, Half, are you thinking, okay, Bontempelli's their best, so we're going to tag him? Or do you say, you know what, I reckon we're a better chance of having success tagging a Treloar or tagging a McRae or tagging a Smith instead so we can get him out of the game and just go head-to-head with Bontempelli?
Well, there's so many different stats that you look at, and the stats that stand out are the ones that can win games. Do you stop Bontempelli inside, who doesn't get McRae the ball on the outside? Do you let Bontempelli have the ball inside? He gets it out to McRae, then you try to belt him up on the outside and not let him kick the football. There's so many at the Western Bulldogs. It's probably the hardest team to do.
Well, that's
but
exactly right.
I think Marcus Bontempelli has the most impact on games at the Western Bulldogs.
You're trying to find out where their damage is coming from. Is it from inside? Is it from outside? Is it forward half? Is it back half? Where's their damage coming from? Then you try and work out how to try and take that away from them. So in the Bulldogs' case, it's probably starting at the source, isn't it? It's coalface stuff. The Bulldogs have got so much depth in that area, but they've got players who are really good in the coalface. Like Libba, Dunkley, those guys who can win the footy and get it out to the ones on the outside. Bont's obviously one of those as well. That are more those inside balls who start everything. I'm a bit of a believer in terms of just coaching philosophy that you can take away the source pressure and the source starts, then you're half a chance to get the ball in your hands in the game on your terms.
Yep, I'm with you.
So I'm a bit like that when I'm trying to sit on someone. I'll go to someone who's going to be causing the grief at the contest, because we should be able to defend the rest of it. If we sort the contest out, we should be able to defend the rest of it okay. If it's coming out of the contest really easily, that's when you're gone anyway as a defensive unit.
The Western Bulldogs, though, they got eight blokes.
Well, that's the problem with the Bulldogs. That's
why
they
throw the ball
strength
around on the inside
that
then becomes outside and then becomes inside 50. And that's their. I'll tell you what.
They're different gravy, the dogs.
I love watching them play.
We're about to go to Anthony, who wants to talk about Carlton. But just one final one on tomorrow night. We'll talk about more in our Friday footy preview. But do the Giants just have to give up on this physicality thing? Because, yes, it worked for them in a final, but it failed miserably last time where they just lost all focus.
I think you should be physical regardless. Sometimes you can go into games, and this is one of them, that you can maybe go over the top and start giving free kicks, and it really hurts you.
Happened last time,
and then you're five goals down at quarter time, you think, shoot, that didn't work. So you've got to have a fine balance, but they can't be tough one week and not tough the next week. They've got to find a really good balance of how we're consistently just a tough team. Is our man De Boer playing?
No, he's still out.
Is the Hammy? Still got the Hammy?
Yeah, no, he's gone skip.
I would have liked to see him play.
Yeah.
Well, that changes the dynamic because he's had great success. He's been one of the great shutdown players for the Giants, but they don't seem to have too many of them floating around.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.